Okay, so from the talks this week and last week, and now you all know that proteins, they prefer certain folds, structures or folds. I don't want, okay, this one. So they don't just arbitrarily fold any structure, they like certain pretty structures. So proteins, even with very different function and sequence homology, they often fold into the same structure, same fold. So here are some of the very popular folds, sometimes called superfolds. And nature likes to use them again and again and again. And naturally, one can ask, is this just accidental, just evolutionary, just by evolution accidentally hit these folds? Or is there some kind of some more reason behind it? Is it some kind of selection? Why nature pick them up? And many people thought about this question and thought about it from various angles, including some in this room. To my knowledge, I think the earliest is Alexei, who first asked the question, why these folds? So we started to think about this question by doing the following extremely simple exercise. So we started with a very small protein, lattice protein, a toy model, 27 long, which can be folded into 3 by 3 by 3 cube. And then we enumerate all the possible sequences, and we started with the only HP sequence, but we did more complicated potentials later on. So it's only red and blue. Red is H, and blue is P, for example. And then you enumerate all the possible structures, or self-avoiding walk, or Hamiltonian walk, on 3 by 3 by 3 lattice. It's about 100,000 different ones of them. And then for each sequence, you just put it on all the structures and evaluate its energy and find the lowest one. So it's just a very simple exercise. And of course, there's some energy function you have to define. I talk about energy function later. What energy function we use and how this depends on energy function. And then okay, so the first thing you found is that there's a huge, large part of the sequence, 95% of the sequences, they don't have a unique ground state. They typically have degenerate ground states.
But how many?
95%.
How many ground states? Because two is like.
Okay, we haven't studied carefully about the distribution of ground states, but typically many. I can't give you a number, but more than two, say.
95% of the sequences
have degenerate ground states, right. Right, so it only leaves me 5%. And of course, this number depends on the model and also what do I mean by degenerate. I will talk about that a little bit later. In this case, degeneracy means exact degeneracy because they only have very simple interactions. They are really degenerate, the true degeneracy. Okay, so for the 5%, you can just make an arrow. For example, this sequence will fold into this structure uniquely, and you make an arrow. And after you're done with the 5%, you look at all these structures here, and then you ask, how many arrows going into each structure? So then you find out that some structures they get a few arrows, and some structures get a lot more arrows. Okay, and then we call this designability, namely how easy to design this structure. That's simply the number of sequences which you can fold into the structure uniquely, and so that's NS. If you plot the distribution of NS. It has an extremely long tail. That's the distribution. Extremely long tail. And if the arrows are sort of shooting structures randomly, then you expect the Poisson distribution. That's this spike, red spike. So it's an extremely long Poisson. So that's the same plot on a log-log scale. So the message is that the huge majority of structures are not so good. They're not so designable. They can be folded by a few sequences, and some of them cannot be folded by any sequences, in fact. And there's some long tail, there are some sequences which can attract huge amount of sequences, but those are the minority. And then you can also study the thermodynamic stability, namely the energy gap of the system. And then you ask, how does that correlate with it's a kind of messy plot with the designability. Okay, so typically you get something like that. Namely, this is designability and this is energy gap. You have a positive correlation with the designability. If the structure can be folded by more sequences, then typically thermodynamics is more stable. You will have a larger gap. And you can also do some mutation studies. Say for this structure, actually this is the top structure in three dimension, 3 by 3 by 3, and this is the top structure in 6 by 6. So there are many, many thousands of sequences were folded into this structure uniquely. So you can just align the sequences and then ask, is on the position 1 always red, always hydrophobic? You know, I think this is 1. This is 0. Okay, this count 0, 1, 2, 3. So this is the probability of being polar, being blue. So then you find out that some places, like these corners, edges, these corners, almost they have to be polar, pretty much. And some crucial sites, they have to be hydrophobic. But there are many, many sort of intermediate sites. It doesn't matter. There are these edges and surfaces. These edges and surfaces, you can sort of mutate freely. So that's why you get this huge number of sequences. And that's the same plot in two dimensions. So you can see it doesn't have to be always hydrophobic, exact hydrophobic, it's not zero. In the center, you can sort of put, you can also put blue in the center, will also be stable. Okay, so so I'm going to switch gear a little bit to talk about the energy function. Aiden will tell us more on Monday. So I said we studied this with a simple energy function, HP model. But why we believe that's meaningful is if you change energy function, we get a completely different answer, or is that something robust? Okay, so if we suppose that this is a very big suppose that an amino acid can be described by a scalar, say charge or hydrophobicity, some scalar Q. This is definitely an approximation because we know amino acids, they have different sizes, they have shape, and depending how you how you make the contact can be very different. But let's say, okay, on average, there's some scalar quantity Q describes the amino acid. And then the interaction energy of two amino acids on coarse grain level, so I can sort of roughly write down into the series expansion. Two body terms, three body term, blah, 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 blah. And then you take, unfortunately, this cannot be calculated, or nobody has been bothered to calculate this from the first principle to figure out what is EIJ. But the biologists, they just went ahead, they constructed this interaction energy by just analyze the database. So this is called a knowledge-based interaction potential. So I apologize for this. This actually should continue here. This is a 20 by 20 symmetric matrix. Okay. So what is plotted here is, so Miyazawa Jernigan first did this. So it's called Miyazawa Jernigan matrix. So it's a very sort of canonical interaction energy people to use to do all kinds of studies. So what they did is basically they count the frequency of amino acid I and J in the database and normalize it with the frequency of amino acid I and amino acid J. This is a contact frequency when they are next to each other. And they assume that this should be a Boltzmann factor here. That's also a big assumption, of course. And then you get this MIJ. It's called Miyazawa-Jernigan matrix. And that's plotted here. So you can sort of shift this uniformly up and down because they can't estimate the overall compactification of the energy. So you can say sort of plus minus a few kT. On this scale. Okay, multiply. Yeah. Okay, so then if you take this matrix and say, can I fit into this formula? Either by eigenvalue decomposition, yes. You shouldn't.
It would randomly grab,
Right, if all the amino acids are not connected by chains, then this is a good approximation. Right? But they are, of course, they're connected by chains. And it's okay. Well, KT is such a set some scale. You know, we know protein are marginally stable around KT. They are not like a zero temperature property sort of. So it's just set some scale. It's not. You know, you shouldn't take that too seriously. But you know, it's room temperature folding and sort of it's a marginally stable room temperature. Okay, so. So then if you do the eigenvalue decomposition of this matrix, or if you can just fit this formula expansion and solve for the coefficients. And then what you find is that, very surprisingly, the matrix can be fit extremely well. I'll show you what do I mean by extremely well. By just three terms, well, this is just average. So it's basically one body part and two body interaction plus epsilon. Okay, and that's the fit. So if you use only one body part and the two body interaction with that Q from the fitting, plot it against the true Miyazawa Jernigan matrix, that's what you get. You have some scatter. Smaller scatter here, if a large scatter here, because you have, you can even explain this because you have less data here. This is a low energy. You have more data here. This is the table 5. This is the 85 table 5. PDB has changed a lot, and they updated their matrix. You can do the similar exercise. It more or less still is something like that, yeah.
But the 96-98 matrices are very, very different.
98-96 matrices are different in terms of the one body term is a little smaller than 85. That's a big difference. But still you can sort of, it's, I can't remember, maybe the fit is not as good as this one, but okay. Okay, so then you take a look of this more seriously. Okay, you say, if the interaction energy is like this, can I assign physical meaning to the one body term and two body term? And then you realize immediately that no, you can't, because there's kind of gauge freedom. Namely, if you change Q to AQ plus B, you will get the same MIJ, but with all the individual term changed and C changed. Okay, so you have to rewrite this in some kind of gauge invariant form. And one way to do it is to write down in this form. You still have one body interaction and plus a two body interaction. Now each term is invariant under this transformation. Okay, so I just call this term kappa. It turns out this kappa is pardon me? It's 20 amino acids.
So it's 20?
20, yeah. Right. No, the yeast amino acids as a Q. These are fitting parameters, right. Those are fitting parameters that fit to that matrix.
So how many parameters total?
23, right. 1, 2, 3 plus 20 Q. QJs. So the kappa ij is in fact the energy of breaking two contacts between ii, between one contact between ii and jj, and form two contacts of I and j. It's sort of segregation term or demixing term. And this is the hydrophobic part, as many of you know, it's just additive. So this part is so-called non-specific, namely. It doesn't care about what's in contact. It contributes the same. So, okay, so if amino acid I in contact with J, it doesn't care if it's J or K. It always contributes HI. So it just cares it's been buried. It's making contact. And this part is two-body It depends on which IMJ they are in contact. And from this you can see sort of demixing. Yeah, that's next. Okay, so I call this hydrophobic part and this is demixing part. And then you estimate, if I rearrange my structure and all the contacts are formed, reformed, what's the typical change of the first term and typical change of second term? And then it turned out the first term, typical change of first term is 6.5 larger than typical change of second term. So that's perhaps not surprising to some of you because we think that hydrophobic interaction, the non-specific interaction is really the one of the dominant driving force.
What's interesting is when you're doing the modeling, sort of the average strength of interaction, average over orientations, contexts, right, or things like that. So it might be that there are lots of terms that can be just as large that when you do the average over pairs of contact, will average out to zero. You know, in a way that hydrophobicity will not average.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's possible. But I should emphasize that this is also coarse-grained model. It's on the residue level, and this may be useful in some studies, but may not be useful in some other studies. And Aidan will tell us that if you are going to use this to predict protein structure, no way. Okay. H is a property of amino acid. So each amino acid, you have H. That's the hydrophobicity of the amino acid.
Sequence has
correct. Right.
How are
that's the figure I didn't make a Xerox on. So the H is distributed by model.
It's by model
around
given magnitude.
Yeah. But as I say, you can sort of shift everything because Miyazawa generally cannot. It's a bimodal with a spread as large as the gap between them. So you can kind of argue, okay, you can use HP model, but it's really big spread. Okay, so you can use various models from this energy function. For example, if you insist that I only want to use two amino acids, H and P. So I can sort of use average HI for hydrophobic amino acid and average HJ for the polar amino acid. And then you can get the interaction from this. So you have sort of few, you can come up with some the energy interaction between HH, HP, and PP. And that's the energy value we used for the enumeration I showed you. And then you can some other models. You can say, okay, since this is a small effect, I can just drop this. And so this is sometimes called salvation model. So the pure hydrophobic model, you just consider hydrophobicity, nothing else. And this model also many people studied. And this model also have many variations. You can insist that I only use two different amino acids. That's again, it's HP salvation model, and I use 20. Of them, then that's a 20-letter salvation model. You can use this even infinity. I think Nick would talk about the limit to infinity.
The original thought of the correlation between desirability and the energy gap, things like that, the curve looks a lot smoother than in your original paper. Is that just that it's plotted a different way, or is it a different
point? So that's the two dimension, and this is three dimension, right? Yeah. So right. So this is a 20-letter Miyazawa genetic matrix, and this is a 2-letter HP model extracted from that Miyazawa genetic matrix. And this is three dimension. In this case, for 2-letter code, there's a jump. Well, in continuous case, you don't have a jump. If someone is interested, I can talk about the jump later.
When you talk about 5% of actually forming substructure, is that consistent with
5% is three-dimensional. Two-dimensional, I can't remember if it's larger or smaller, but it's a few percent. So I speed up. Okay, so I was going to say that you can do the same designability study for the energy functions I said, you know, various approximation to the Miyazawa generic matrix. So essentially you get the same thing, you get a long tail, and this is lattice model, and this is a 20 letter code, depending how you define the degeneracy. It's KT or half KT or 0.1 KT, you get different distribution as small. For small design for bad structures, but for good structures, basically long tail. Okay, so basically the whole picture survives at least.
May I ask you, why do you have this intersection of the curve?
So there are three curves here.
Yeah, one is.
You're right. One is for this one. It's just what I mean by degeneracy, I really mean degeneracy. Even they differ by 0.01 kT,
yeah.
I say they're non-degenerate.
Yeah.
I count them in the designability calculation, that's here. And for the extreme case here, I say as long as they are within 0.8 kT, I say these two states are degenerate. I will throw this sequence away. If this sequence has two ground states within 0.8 kT, I throw it away. So that's this one. So that's as you can see, when you increase the cutoff of degeneracy, sort of approaches the lattice model.
Wait, KT, what is KT?
It's the Miyazawa generic matrix unit.
KT, yeah. Miyazawa.
Miyazawa generic. Yeah.
For two letters, you did enumeration for all sequences, right?
For two letters, we did enumeration for all sequences in 3 by 3 by 3, but. We cannot do it for 6 by 6. We just sample. We just use a random number generator and random pick.
So it's samples from random samples for 20
letters. Right? Random sampling in sequence space.
For
20 letters too. Right? That's just a repeat what I just said. If you use different energy potentials, and of course, when you use very different energy potential, the good structure will change. It will not be this one. This is the top structure, the best structure in 6 by 6, with the set of potential we are using. If you use, RNA folding potential, or completely two-body interaction, no one-body interaction, I'm sure this will be gone. But within sort of, I believe, the physical range of the interaction potential, these structures are pretty robust. The good structures, they still be good if you use the different potential. This is 3D case, you use different two potential. They are slightly different, but you see the geometry are very similar. And this is just a bad structure, and these are two good structures. You can do this for larger systems. For 4 by 3 by 3, you can also do this. And here, the distribution is much smoother. So, you know, some theorists might think that it's helpful to calculate this curve. That's a designability distribution. And this is the pure observation model, just one body interaction. OK. So I spent 5 minutes maybe 3 minutes to tell you. There's an interesting theoretical problem behind all this. So this is just observation from computer simulation, right? But you can certainly ask, okay, why some structures are better than others? Can we pick them up from some general theory? Okay, so let's take the simplest model, the solvation model, namely I only have one body interaction. The symbol has slightly changed. But amino acid I can contact with amino acid J is just additive of 2 hydrophobicity. Okay. And if the interaction potential is just one body term, the Hamiltonian is extremely simple. It's a dot product of 2 strings, or sometimes in biology they call profiles. I think David Eisenberg is one of the first who pioneered this idea of use a metric in the sequence and structure space so you can do manipulations. So you can sort of define the metric for the sequence and structure space with this Hamiltonian. So you have, now your sequence is just a string or a vector of hydrophobicity. Okay, so you have a sequence. And I mean, that's the number I, amino acid, has hydrophobicity HI. And the SI is a structure information, which just measures, if you have a structure, which just measures the exposure of this amino acid to water, or inaccessible surface area to water. So you have a very hydrophobic one, and the S is large, namely it's buried, nothing can be accessed to water, then you have a large energy. Okay, so the SI is structure dependent, HI is sequence dependent. So perhaps it's much easier to see this on the lattice model. So for example, in lattice model, I have, for example, again, for simplicity, I have only HP. H is red and P is blue. And you have all kinds of different structures. And the energy is such that how many red ones you can bury in the center. And for this structure, you can see you can bury 7 red. And here you can bury 10. Okay, so energy is -7. In this case, it's -10. Again, this energy comes from the cross product of the sequence string with the structure string. Okay, sequence string is just hydrophobic is 1, polar is 0. Structure string is that if you're completely inaccessible, it's 1. If you're accessible, it's 0. Okay. Okay, so then this Hamiltonian is just a dot product of two strings. And that's equivalent to the distance between the two strings. That's because the square term are constants. And if in the HP model, if just zeros and ones, it's just the Hamming distance. So pick your favorite. You can use distance or you can use Hamming distance in the different spaces. Okay, so now I have a metric for the structure and sequence space. Now I can put them on top of each other. So now here, it's high dimensional, n dimensional space. But let me draw it sort of extremely crude way in two dimensions. So I have all my sequences in the blue dots. So the sequence space is very trivial because for a sequence, every point can be either 0 or 1. So it's uniform and space filling. And then I have all my structures also represented by strings of zeros and ones. And they are these circles, the red circles. But they are extremely non-trivially distributed. The reason is very simple. Not any arbitrary string of zeros and ones can actually represent the structure. Right? And actually, the structure space is much sparse than sequence space. And the distribution of them is extremely non-uniform. And I think the distribution of it really can tell us something about where are the good structures and where are the bad structures. So as we said, a sequence folded into a structure is just the distance between the sequence and structure. Okay? So for example, if I take this structure, so I ask, what are the sequences which can fold into this structure uniquely? So then I just do the Wallander construction. So all the sequences which are closer to this structure than to any other structures were folded into this structure uniquely.
But how did you distribute the red points? What do you know about distribution of red
circles? Okay. At this point, we know extremely little about the distribution of the red circle. For simple lattice models, you can enumerate structures and plot the distribution and study it and get some idea. So I'm hoping that some of you can come up with some idea and can calculate, you know, the distribution of red circle. So So one day you can tell me that, I know this structure is actually here. It's a large volatile polytope. It's a good structure. I know this structure is here, sort of surrounded by many structures. It's the best structure. But at this point, we can't do that.
Yeah, we came about with a similar conclusion from different line of thought, and it's exactly the same. And our results were that, again, with the long rate contacts, the more long rate contacts there are, the fewer other structures that have been
seen. Yeah, there's some. That's for different model, right? So there are.
It's not really that different model. I mean, I think the larger cones that are somewhere like 180 degrees in direction. But I think basically the details of the model don't matter that much in terms of the analysis.
Yeah, there are some sort of signatures of good structure. I have two transparencies to finish. I'll probably show you one signature. Okay, so I think if you forget everything about the half hour talk, I think that's the picture I really wish you take home. Namely, the sequence space uniform, structure space, some non-trivial distribution. We hope that we can calculate this. And the good structures are the structure which are far away from the neighbors. Okay, and then of course, right now we cannot calculate this distribution, but numerically we can sort of enumerate structure and study this distribution for small structures. So the next transparency which I'm going to show you is that, okay, I pick a structure like this, then ask, what are the number of structures within Hamming distance D, or at the Hamming distance D? So that's sort of density of states. The Hamming distance is just energy. So that's just to tell you, as you go higher and higher energy, how many available competing structures you are going to get. So that answer depends, of course, which structure you pick. If you pick a bad structure, a structure is crowded with all other structures, then you have a lot of structures are nearby. So that's this top curve. That's the number of structures at Hamming distance D. If you pick a good structure, you don't have much structures nearby. So that's this a lowest square curve. It's always above. It's always below this this top curve. So basically that's what you get for most of the structures. You get this top curve, and for few structures you get this something like the below curve, lower curve. You have fewer competing structures, and probably you see this plot. I think Alexei showed a. The energy spectrum, something like that. So I'm just idealize this. So most of the structures will have the energy spectrum of something like the green line. This energy, this entropy. So basically, when you lower the temperature, you go to this glass-like or you know, it's useless many ground states. Without much gap. But for few structures, it's like the purple line. The ground states are here, and then all the other states are pushed up, pushed further away. So depending how you define gap, either way you define gap, you have a larger gap. Okay. And the crucial question is, of course, how can we find out these structures from some from the distribution of the structure space, and which we know very little about. I think.
If you look at this spectrum in your actual model, I mean, my question is: this a cartoon or actual data?
This is not a cartoon. This is actual data, and in 3D the data is much smoother. I wasn't going to give a talk, but Terry forced me to give a talk, so I didn't bring my best transparencies.
What D is
energy. D is Hamming distance. D is Hamming distance. Okay, D is Hamming distance. I draw a circle.
And
D is the number of structures around at Hamming distance D. So that's entropy. It's plotted in the log scale.
The number of structures for a given sequence, right?
No. A number. No. This isn't. Okay, I didn't confuse. I jumped. I said I jumped a little bit. Okay, So the right. Right, right. So this is just the structure information, right? And then you use a sequence, the best sequence. Say for this structure, I can use a sequence which matches this structure exactly, and that's the energy spectrum.
So you take one sequence, the best sequence, and enumerate all structures for this sequence.
Perhaps,
right?
Yeah, precisely.
And you show energy versus
entropy.
The number of states versus energy for this sequence.
Right, right.
That's what you're saying.
That's correct.
What is this part of the diagram?
Aha. Uh-huh. So that's something. Yeah. Right. So that's right. So then you ask. We don't know how this structure. We can pick up this structure from first principle, but can we find some signatures of the good structures? Just the phenomenological rule. It turns out one good rule is that the good structure tend to have many in and out transitions. They like to go in and out very frequently. So that we call surface core transitions. And that plot on the right is this plot is a little bit cheating. It's the surface core transition versus the width of this plot. So if a large surface core transition, you have a small width, so the distribution is narrower. You have a larger gap. What do you mean? Come on, that's the gap. That's the thermodynamic gap. If this is a temperature, 1/T. If you change the temperature, this is equal free energy line.
Right.
So that's. Okay. Okay. So first of all, this is 2D data. It's sort of a little worse here. 3D, a better situation. But even for 2D, you can see that there's a difference between this energy spectrum and this energy spectrum. So what's your You don't like this point? If this point is here. There's always a point here. That's a ground state for any spectrum. There's always a point here.
You cannot draw the main point.
Sorry. It's always a point here for all the spectrum.
Okay,
that's a
difference.
Okay. I'm done. For those of you who like to play with partition functions, that's the designability expressed in partition function, and if you can calculate this, that'd be wonderful. But as I say, this depends on the distribution. This is trivial because it's random distribution of the S's in this structure space, and that's related to Hamiltonian walk, statistical Hamiltonian walk. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Any indication they are really what is valuable in your
sense? This is it. What you mean?
Use the first slide to motivate.
Right. Do we know that the real protein popular folds are really the designable folds?
Yes.
Okay. That's we hope so, and we are testing this, and the second talk is sort of related to this. Yeah. The geometrical picture still survives, but the metric is slightly different. And if you add two-body term, you will not have this sort of monoid type compact. You will sort of have arms, and I don't know if you can form holes, but. Certainly, if you in the extreme case, if you only have two body term, no one body term, that's like RNA pairing, I would think. it's like RNA paper. And then you have sort of percolating.
It seems that if you go away from this one-body model, you don't even, the structure and the sequence don't live in the same space anymore.
They still live in the space. You can increase the dimension of this space. This, you can still make them live in space. You can just, you can use, for example, the one approach is just use the contact map. You just say, okay, for each structure, you have a contact map. So that's a big vector. Yeah. And for sequence, you can also construct something like that. It's much less geometrically transparent. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you mean by local global? You mean it depends on only the structure, competing structure nearby, or far? Yeah. I still don't understand your question of local versus global.
Global, I mean, kind of global.
No, I have a global constraint too, right? I mean, this is every within. I don't. Okay, I can't. I don't know. I don't know which contexts are more important, local or global. I think Richard, for one function, they will say probably global context is. In this model, I don't know. Yeah. Like RNA model, right?
What is a, is there some objective way to find out what is a better, what is more applicable or closer to the real protein?
Okay, so it's right. Yeah. So that's why I talked about the energy function. It's basically the one body term versus two body term, I think, in my view. So I think people may differ that. I think this term dominates. This will give you pretty much the coarse-grained protein-folding problem. So,
but, well, I mean, if you think this dominates, then you get this thing, and if you think the system dominates, then you get something.
Okay.
What is closer to the truth?
You okay? As I said, I talked to biologists, and you hear all the talks. You hear this week and last week, we hear again and again the hydrophobicity, right? And details matter. This details matter, and also many other details matter too. So I don't think you can use this to predict any structure or do any even realistic study. But I think to get a rough picture, I think this will carry us pretty far. It's probably not enough. Pardon me?
Whereas the second one is always second one.
No, I disagree with that. No, I disagree. You can get that random transition with the second one for design sequences.
I'm talking about the random polynomial.
Yeah, but when you figure differences for like geometry, with the second term you get the
first order. Yes, you select frequencies, sure. But generic, no.
Yeah,
I'm talking about generic.
Okay.
What I say is for
you can find that.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm just saying what I know.
Okay. As I said, different people may have different opinion, but I think this is more important. And this is a perturbation. Yeah. And from Miyazawa-Jernigan, which you can still question a lot, and this is 7.5 times larger than this, as I showed. 7.5 means like 86-87% something like that of energies are from here.
Yeah,
and
but the Islamic journey itself is very problematic because
I agree, yeah.
You apply the Islamic journey to whatever aspect of real prophet, if you want
okay,
to understand
right.
Something about the messages of real prophets, the Islamic journey is not very helpful. For example, the native state with the Islamic journey is by far not the ground state compared with very small number of people.
Sure. As I said, the Miyazawa Jonagon is way too crude to predict any structures. I think Aidan will talk in detail about this next Monday. It's actually maybe even two-body potential. I think his title is pairwise potential cannot fold the proteins. Right? So even a two-body potential may not precise predict which fold against another. No, he means two-body interaction, pairwise interaction.
Yeah,
in the three-body. Amino acid base. Okay. Yeah, I mean there's still many questions. Okay. So yeah, so I think okay. So you can take the view that okay, maybe both terms are present. One is larger than the others. I think this is larger, and maybe someone else will think this is larger. And in this limit you can do something, and in this limit you can do something, and they can merge.
And if I add something to the third term there, which is plus epsilon, where epsilon has an unknown magnitude, which depends upon
yes.
Yes,
and the epsilon is protein specific.
Protein specific context.
Yeah, and that's a place physicists can't help at all.
Well, the thing is, you don't know what the value is, but it's only a model that has certain value.
Okay.
I'll just describe a protocol to go after the real protein, but of course that's a daunting task, so we have to limit the resolution. So the first of all, because the knowledge of the structure space is so limited, and we have to really use very low resolutions. And so the model that we'll be using is the of lattice model. In other words, it's kind of a natural extension of the lattice model. That is, we have these dihedral angles on every peptide bonds. But obviously, there has Ramachandra plots limited the choices you can have for those two angles. So we'll make choices, which is called M. So how many choices you can have on every joint. So it's a random walk, so the orientation has only three choices, but they are not on the lattice. But the number of choices is limited. So that will be our model. And furthermore, we use these, the size of the side chains are represented by the spherical ball here. In other words, we don't have the side chain distribution, the size distribution. Okay. And for all these talks, and actually the choices I'll make for some of these results is actually only three possible choices. For this pair, in other words, there's only three angles. But how to choose those three angles and so on and so forth is not a trivial matter. So there would be two approaches. One is using the incompassing angles. In other words, fit the sets of representative proteins and use the best fit you can have for those three angles. Or you can target some specific class of proteins, and which way is better, I'll leave it to you to make the judgment. So I use the second approach. That is, I'm particularly interested in these a short real protein 1PSSV that is synthesized in the lab. So it's a DNA binding protein, zinc finger, and particularly this one does not have these important disulfide bridge. So we will have a hope to model those because we don't have these residue specific side chains. We just have a sphere. Okay. And so these NMR, we will chop those floppy ends. So this will be the protein we're interested in. The question is, this is an actual protein, is it highly designable? And that leaves the question, what do we mean is designable? What kind of structure space we're sampling? So on and so forth.
Designable compared to
to what exactly? So what are the phase space we're talking about? So the phase space then, therefore, we were trying to ask another question slightly. If we don't want to use a very high resolution, for example, only three angles, so every turn can make three choices. And we allow the choices of these, the precise value of three choices can vary, but we only limit to three choices. And indeed, we can actually fit this thing very well. So with the three angles, what are the angles? I didn't write it down here, but at least you can make three. So the CRMS is very small, you know, because you can have overlap very well. But immediately you should notice the turn regions is not very represented by these three choices. Okay. So once you fix this angle, three choices, then your phase space is fixed because it's a random walk, and every walk can take three choices. So they walk around in the space. So now that will be my phase space. Then I asked myself the question, is this one I'm interested in that space is designable or not? Furthermore, what kind of other folds that will be designable in that phase space? Okay. And so what is, in order to talk about designability, we have to give some energy functions in order to make it thermodynamically stable. So one possible choice is to use these hydrophobicity kind of contribution. So each residue has some radius. So we'll calculate the accessible surface area, use a water molecule to probe what kind of accessible areas that residue will have. That will be these little a. Then we normalize it. The reason we normalize it is because we want to fuzzy up this resolution a bit. Because this angle is very rigid, the resolution is very small. So we only want to keep the information content, not a very precise value. So we normalize it. In other words, keep the pattern. So we fuzzy up the energy a little bit. Then we use that with this hydrophobicity of each monomer. So that'd be energy. That's one term of the energy. The other term is we actually also calculate the backbone hydrogen bond energy. So there are two terms in the energy. This is one, there's another one. The ratio is tuned such that the contribution from these hydrophobicity is about 7 or 10 times more on average than that of hydrogen bonding energy contribution. So what are the final results? The results are the following. Again, the designability concept survives. In other words, there are structures. I'll show you what are those structures that has a very high designability, but the number, of course, is very small. The majority of them have very, this is the designability. How many sequences? We use HP. So the length of the particular protein we're studying is 23 residues. So the sequence space is 2 to 23, okay? And these are, so in other words, majority of these structures have very low designability. And let's look at how the designability correlates with the thermodynamic stability, again, the gap. So we have these average gap, we have the maximum gap. So there are sequences that really design that one very well. So in any case, those are correlates very well. So in other words, the gap goes up. The value here, the units, is a bit arbitrary. So we don't have some KT or type of things because the in other words, for a given given structure, there are many sequences designed that one. And suppose you pick a structure and the best sequence design it, then you ask what's the gap for that sequence. Then there are many.
Is 10 to the power of minus 3.
Yeah, because that's the energy.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to point it out. The units actually here is very arbitrary.
Potential.
Yeah.
You have variation of potential. This is your energy.
Right. That's because we are these. There is a surface. So this is just the surface area dot zero and or one. So that will be the units. That's a little bit arbitrary.
One.
Yeah, because you average over. Yeah, it's the energy is order one, but the gap is not. Yeah, so it's very small. Using these units, just using, in other words, the energy is defined such that if everything is, if you use this hydrophobic. So in other words, if it's zero everywhere, then the energy is zero. If you use one everywhere, the energy is one. So the energy distribution is 0, 1. In that unit, the gap is that small. Very small, indeed. But that depends on what exactly those energy scales we're talking about. Nonetheless, the right. Yeah, in this case, actually, for this particular plot, the energy used is only hydrophobicity contributions. The hydrogen bonding energy is not included. But nonetheless, yes, this would be fairly small in the sense the gap is very small. Yeah, if in terms of energy, that is, there is a fairly amount of
very close in energy to this ground state because something another confirmation. That does that mean that?
The confirmation, we actually, in the actual calculation, this gap is to the structure that is not within this some amount of CRMS distance. We actually cluster the configuration. The further reduce is the resolution.
So what you are saying is that near the ground state, there will be always a structure with like RMS, but with almost exactly the same energy within this gap. So about
that appears to be the conclusion, yes, with this energy calculation. In that case, yes. And the other questions we would also like to ask is how? Yeah. No, for the structure. There are two things you need a cluster. Yeah, there's this designability, in other words, how many sequences goes to one structure. But then there is also another structure that's fairly similar. Then there's other sequence goes into it. Actually, in the end, if they are very close in CRMS. Oh, the gap is the so all these so for example, if there's another structure that is a CRMS, it's very different. Then is that for the same sequence? That would be the gap. Not within not the gap to the structure that's very close. Gap to the structure. Yeah, you also fuzzy up the structure. So the gap is from this sector to the other sector. That'd be the definition of gap.
Yeah, but again, you see
that
clustering
with
different sequences.
Clustering?
No, because there's a point on that plot for every sequence.
Yes.
Not for every structure.
Yeah, oh, this is actually for the structure. I actually for the cluster. Everything I do is already clustered. The structure space is already clustered. Although I sort of interchange in the words. A configuration and the cluster. That I'm not counting as a gap. Yeah.
No, but he seems to be answering your question in different ways. So basically, you take a sequence, and for this sequence you enumerate all conformations.
Correct.
Then you look at the ground state for this sequence.
Correct.
And you ask how far for this particular sequence is the next structure, whatever, cluster, non-cluster, is that your gap or not?
That is my gap, but the one must be outside the cluster of the structure. Okay. In other words, must be deeper. Yeah, deeper enough. Then I count. Yes. Yes. No, we have not done that. This is all enumeration. There's no kinetic. In other words, what are the barriers, so on and so forth. No, we haven't checked it. We basically classify things according to CRMS. Yes.
Uh,
Yes, in the sense that this particular plot basically just shows the gap is going up, but how large is the gap? In other words, depends on your resolution, because the things that differ very little. The KT, if you define the hydro things, okay. So if you see the average energy in this case will be the largest one will be 1, and the smallest will be 0. So you can think of the on average is half, and then if you say the most of these if that is the order of certain KTs, then those things are very small. Yeah. So if this is if you take these hydrophobic contribution as a KT, yeah, gap is very small. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's a tiny gap. Right. So in other words, what's the energy scale for this thing? If you say hydrophobicity contribution, because this energy in my model is 0 and 1. So if you tune that as whatever KT that's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah, in this case. Yeah, it's 0, 1. So if you say normal, yeah, so you can say roughly half order. Yeah, things of that order. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that would be your whatever the natural KT is. The one would also like to know how this whole thing survives if you perturb some of the parameters like the Bohr radius and the number of structure enclosed, so on and so forth, and the number of angle sets you select. And one measure is, say, what's the percentage of the top designable structure remains in the top designable structure, so on and so forth. And you see all those percentages are pretty high. In other words, they survive. Furthermore, you can also randomize your HP selections by draw random numbers, and also those things correlate very well. So in other words, it's not just because 0 and 1, if you randomize it, everything between 0 and 1 in this HP sequence space, they also correlate very well.
So your statement is that your lowest energy structure is robust. You change your parameters and it stays.
Yes, exactly.
How is compatible with small gap? I don't
think. It's the percentage, not that a particular structure is very stable or not. In other words, if what I'm plotting here is, in other words, the 60% in the top 100 designable structure remains in the top 100 designable structure when you perturb the number of, according to compactness, how compact are the things you include in your designability calculation, or the clustering radius. When you group structures together, treat a few configurations as one, so on and so forth. And those things, it seems to survive very well. The designability parts. So, what are the typical folds we get in that long tail? Let me see if I get it roughly right. Yes, that's what I'm afraid of. So I was trying to get it roughly. So indeed, you see, this is the, when you include hydrophobicity contribution as well as the hydrogen bonds, the backbone hydrogen bonds, then you see these, the zinc finger-like, in other words, alpha, beta, like zinc finger-like structure is the third most designable. We have all atoms in the backbone, so it's only backbone hydrogen bonding.
What you did before was hydrogen.
Yeah, for that particular plot, but the hydrogen bond contribution is only which I mean the energy. Yeah, the energy is chosen such that a hydrogen bond contribution on average is 1/10 of the, so it's a small perturbation. So that doesn't change the order of everything. Okay.
Is the hydrogen bond contribution necessary to have the secondary structure elements, or
does that come from the? That's more of coming from the angle, it appears to be, the sets. But.
You said that hydrogen bonds are important for perturbation. If you drop completely hydrogen bonds, what will happen?
Oh, wow. Well, the point is when you select those three angles, you have already used the knowledge-based selection. So there's some energy function features already built into those angles. So it's not randomly select three angles. Then the hydrogen bonding will be very important.
So there is angular dependence. I mean, there is angular dependence of energy in your model. That's what you're saying. That there are five sides. The energy depends on five sides.
Well, no. If you don't
inside the bottom and then the top structure, the thing is still there, and the adhesive is still there, and all the rest are not. You see some
huh?
Which is the energy?
Which is energy?
Yeah. What is the energy?
Energy is just this hydrophobicity contribution on the hydrogen bond, backbone hydrogen bond. But what are the functions I use of hydrogen bond?
Yeah.
Or what are the formulas I use for the energy? Vaguely. Vaguely is just 10^12 type of thing. So you have these donors. You have oxygens. This is all on the backbone, right? So, there are some angles, so on and so forth. So, but essentially, the dominant feature is the distance between the donors and acceptors. So the whole thing is has some 10^12, and with 8 cal per kmol, so on and so forth. But then there is a ratio in front. I have to tune this energy. So this contribution to my original hydrophobicity contribution is that this is only 1/10 of the total energy. So it's a small
curve. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. The three values of each. Well, once you give the configuration, all these angles is fixed, right?
What about directionality?
The directionality is fixed in some of these angles. Oh, you couldn't see it. There are some angles. That's directionality. Right, because you have different directions. So. Yeah, the angle is taken into account. So it's 90 and 1200 degrees the most favorable, or some other 100, so on and so forth. So that's just the standard, or has been used a lot by other things. So you see, the whole point is some of these popular fields, particularly the ones we started with, that we wanted to check whether this field is highly designable. Indeed, some of these fields is highly designable, so on and so forth. Also, some of these other kind of EF finger-like, hands-like motifs is also there. And it also seems to suggest that you can also swap some of these orders to make some links, so on and so forth. Now, whether we'll be able to model these things a little bit, or relax a little bit to make it a real protein, in other words, depends on how you pack the side chain, so on and so forth, will be next stage. But nonetheless, it appears to be at least one of the things we know is this one. In these super decoys, it's highly designable. Okay, thank you.